Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 458. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is happening, sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, Stunt Granny Studios North is ready to be on sale, so that is one of the reasons why we are recording a day later than normal. Usually it's immediately after SmackDown. This week, not immediately after NXT, because I didn't even watch that. I was still behind on both Raw. Well, I did not watch any Raw today. I did watch, some SmackDown Live still. So that does keep with our normal trend of talking about what honestly just immediately happened, at least for me. For you, it happened 24 hours ago.
Yeah, it did happen 24 hours ago, and though I as well did not watch Raw on Monday night, I did end up watching it Tuesday, though I believe quite a bit earlier than you did still. But yeah, SmackDown is certainly still fresher in mind.
So I guess we could start with, one segment opened and closed the show there. Well, three persons, I guess, opened and closed the show. And that was Big Cass, Samoa Joe, and Daniel Bryan.
Oh, that was the sound, that is me copying the sound, over 10,000 people made last night when Big Cass's music hit. That, wow. I mean, I get that it was touch and go with Big Cass, whether he was going to be, when he was going to be cleared to return. But, man, did they have to promote Samoa Joe versus Daniel Bryan for an entire week and then turn it into a triple threat match involving maybe the least exciting addition to the match you probably could have come up with.
It fits in storyline wise, just because he has had a problem with Daniel Bryan. But much rather Samoa Joe versus Daniel Bryan alone. Especially, I mean, they were given a good amount of time. And I guess Big Cass's wrestling does not offend me quite as much as his mic work.
Oh, his mic work is pretty bad. He is absolutely reciting lines, playing wrestler, He's not confident in himself. You can tell he's not confident in himself yet. He hasn't found himself yet. He's not ready to be a star on his own. Since he came back to SmackDown and started this thing with Daniel Bryan, I thought The Miz as a heavy to a loudmouth, but him on his own trying to be a star, it's not there yet. Maybe in the ring it won't ever be that great, he's definitely way too soon on the promos to get the amount of time he's getting here.
And it really doesn't help Samoa Joe is up there with Paul Heyman and The Miz as far as, mic quality over the last couple of years. When did Joe come up? A year ago?
About that, yeah.
So over the last year, Samoa Joe, in my opinion, has been as good as those other two. When you go from Samoa Joe and Daniel Bryan, it is kind of strange where He does a lot with not that much.
He is earnest. He's believable. There's a comparison probably can be made to Bret Hart in that sense. He believes what he's saying. You think of him as when he's speaking as an honest, honorable guy who's being true to himself. Not always being the most dynamic promo. Yeah, and then you got Samoa Joe, who has essentially been the same person for well over a decade. So he knows who he is, and WWE has, you know what? To their credit, they have not tinkered with him. They have not, you know, they have allowed Joe to be Joe. Whether his verbiage is scripted or not, he delivers it like Samoa Joe would deliver it. He is not, you know, he is totally into who Samoa Joe is.
I think we always, that was one thing that in TNA that drove me bonkers with him, is that he always, he'd have good promos like the ones that he's having now, but then he would have those ones where he was just basically frothing at the mouth, yelling at the cameraman, and it just didn't work. Like, no. he has a great focused intensity to him that he doesn't need to be screaming like that.
I 100% agree, yes, absolutely. Those TNA promos were forced. He was being produced terribly to yell and scream and spit and drool all over the camera. It was not himself. It didn't work. I mean, these promos are definitely... They've been working for him. He has stood toe-to-toe in a promo battle with Paul Heyman. He did that last year. He pretty much earned him, well, until his unfortunate second injury situation. He really, he truly earned himself. Well, that was the first injury situation coming out of SummerSlam last year, unfortunately, when he was really on a roll. He earned himself that SummerSlam, into that SummerSlam main event.
Oh, right.
He hadn't performed so well in the 4 weeks leading up to his one-on-one match with Brock Lesnar. He would have been pushed down. I truly believe he would have been pushed down the card afterward. There's likely no plan to go to a four-way with Reigns and Strowman. It probably would have been a triple threat or one-on-one with one or the other. They decided... Joe's work was in his promos. You know, Joe earned his way into, you know, was maybe at this point still considered the biggest match of his career, and he's doing it again. He's going to be the top, along with Nakamura and The Miz. He's going to be the top heel mix on SmackDown for the foreseeable future.
I mean, those are the three big guys on that show, and it's a pretty awesome top three. When they took The Miz away the previous year, it really left a hole that Kevin Owens filled some of it, but there still wasn't... Owens doesn't always do as many segments as The Miz does.
No.
I guess. Like, he doesn't fill a show like The Miz can. I don't think I'm saying his stuff is bad, but The Miz really can kind of fit in a plethora of situations that, you know, Owens can be more just wrestling focused, but, The Miz can do all kinds of weird backstage stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but once again, as we're saying, you know, Samoa Joe is right up there. Big Cass just does not belong in this picture yet. It's not working. It didn't work in the ring at Backlash between Cass and Bryan. I mean, look at the matches that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks with Finn Balor and Braun Strowman, you know, textbook examples of how to do David versus Goliath in the wrestling ring.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much of a difference between Daniel Bryan and Finn Balor. There's a world of difference right now in in-ring talent between Braun Strowman and Big Cass.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not sure that Braun Strowman is real. Has he had less time?
Yeah, it's a
One way or the other, they are about equal.
They are about. Oh, Cass has been a project since they pretty much opened the Performance Center and the beginning of NXT at Full Sail University. But once again, he was very much programmed to be a tag team guy for all the time he was there, and for most of his, and for, you know, the vast majority of his main roster run as well. He's still learning how to be a singles guy. I don't think you can take someone who's just learning to be a singles guy like that and just put him in this situation. It's not working for him.
Well, it's kind of funny that they always talk about that transition, but they, you know, I guess they dropped that topic with Big Cass a while ago, and it kind of helped that, or hurt, I guess, in some ways, that he was the muscle of his team, so you expect him to be fine in the ring, but he wasn't. So it doesn't, you know, he really needed to back it up, and it's hard for him to do that. Like, I wouldn't say he's the worst wrestler, but he's not good either.
Right. I wouldn't say he's the worst, but I just, right now, he's got to go away. I don't want to see him. I feel like a horrible person for saying this, but there was a part of me that was disappointed when I found out he wasn't really that hurt. He was going to be back shortly, because I got to figure they're going to insert him right back in with Daniel Bryan. I'm sorry, I'm a bad person. I apologize.
as long as you admit it, it's all good.
Yeah. I'm just not interested in him. I don't buy him. I don't buy him with what he's saying. And the promos are probably worse than the in ring right now. I would say that.
Oh yeah.
He shouldn't be having matches with Daniel Bryan. If he is, he should be having them on house shows and not on pay per view or television yet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of one of those funny things is that. Yeah, they just needed to start him off somewhere lower and build him up, and they haven't really done that at all, because I'm trying to, oh, that's right, because he didn't get past the Enzo feud, because that's when he blew out his knee.
Right, no, he didn't have a chance to really get any traction going, but once again, during that time period, him and Enzo had awful matches. He was having awful matches with the Big Show, when in that same time period, Big Show was having great matches, really, you know, truly great matches with Braun Strowman. So once again, the common denominator in all of this suck is Big Cass. He is not, they haven't been doing him right from the start. At least from the moment they broke up Enzo and Cass up, they have not been doing Cass right. They didn't do Cass with the breakup. Granted, if, you know, Enzo was destined to be fired within 6 months, they would have to figure out something different with him anyway. But
yeah,
that's hindsight. You couldn't imagine the downfall of Enzo, you know, last summer. So, you know, keeping them together was probably the right idea. But here we're at, you know, they're really, you know, pushing Cass into situations he doesn't belong in. You know, once again, and that's not going to help in the long run. He was getting as I said, for me, I think with the audience, audible groans, not the right kind of heat, as they say, and things like that can really hurt a guy, even when he is ready. So yeah, I think they've made some huge missteps with Cap that I don't. Especially if he has another middling match with Daniel Bryan on pay per view, and that might be the end of him, or not the end of him, but that that's not going to help his cause.
No, it is not at all. Because I mean, it was kind of as much as we complained about the Jinder Mahal stuff, like everything that's come after that, after a bunch of middling matches with the title and with the big name like Randy Orton, things have not gone particularly well for him. I mean, he's still gotten way more TV time than he was getting, but things are not world championship level for him at this juncture. One hot button issue to jump back to SmackDown first. Oh shit, and I completely forgot to hit up Jeremy before hitting record. something that he brought up to me, honestly, was the dance-off. And, he really thought the ladies were being done a disservice by having this. What say you?
I felt it. In the end, I felt it was inoffensive. If not, somewhat entertaining at least. They both are at least good dancers.
I guess that's why it didn't bother me, because, both of them are legitimately dancers, albeit in different forms. There's all kinds of filler bullshit that the men go through too. And to me, this is one of those ones where they wanted to have a women's segment, they wanted to promote the women's Money in the Bank. And it's one way to not have another match. And I mean, I guess the bad thing about that is that you're kind of hiding behind Lana's lack of in-ring skills. Or else you would have just had a Naomi versus Lana match.
Yeah, we had plenty of that. We had plenty of that last year. you're absolutely right. You're absolutely hiding Lana. Lana's lack of in-ring skill, keeping her out of the ring. Her inclusion in Money in the Bank is somewhat strange, considering the fact that it seemed like they have been giving up on her in the ring for a while. I mean, I get it. I mean, the idea of Rusev and Lana both going to be Mr. and Mrs. Money in the Bank together, I think it's a fun storyline. Right. And once you get her in the match, you can keep her out of the way with seven other women in there, and doing something right like this is a good distraction. It gets Rusev involved. Once again, Rusev and Lana should never be apart from each other. Period. Aiden English is to be a part of the trio act, which is the best thing for him. The Usos are without anything really to do right now, so getting them involved so you can do mixed tag matches down the line, that's fine. I like the back to back dancing into the neck breaker. I thought that was really well done. And then the brawl was good, and although leading to the match where it's Aiden English teaming with Lana against Naomi and is it Jimmy?
I believe she's married to Jimmy.
Okay, Naomi and Jimmy Uso. That's a weird part. I don't know why it wouldn't be Rusev, but I guess they're trying to go somewhere with
if they want someone to take the loss and it to not be Lana.
That's true too. Yes, she's there for that. You can still do more stuff. You can be six person tags and eventually include Rusev in it. And, we still got a couple two episodes of SmackDown before Money in the Bank. I didn't have a problem with the dance off. It gives them something to do. They're both actually good at it. No one was embarrassed by their performance. Is it somewhat of a throwback to the not so glory days of the divas? You could argue that, but once again, when you put two women in this, it's not like those times where they put all these they would force bikini contests on the show and.
Not
give the women any time to prepare or anything, and whatever imperfections or anything of that.
It was
in a situation where they were going to shot.
It was definitely not a bikini contest. It was not a mud wrestling match. It may not have been an ideal format, but I do think that there's going to be some kind of bomb segments. Like if they. Do the women right, do the women like the men. There's just gonna be some segments that you just gotta go, didn't really work. There's just it's not always gonna be perfect, and that's one to me that, like you said, I really enjoyed kind of the outcome of it. I can understand the argument of it not being the best for the Divas Revolution, but I honestly was more annoyed, if you're going to talk about that, and this was him tying together a larger women's point, the gauntlet match on Raw. I guess you don't need to execute it exactly like the men's match that took place. But having two matches finish so quickly, to me, is a much worse look than a dance-off.
I agree with you. I think that... but at the same time, I feel like the match was the right length. At the same time, I get it that the men's match was three times. It was wait, how long? Less than that. Possibly four times as long. Three, four times as long. I don't know.
Yeah, was it 2 hours or 1 hour?
The whole match took 2 hours.
Okay, yeah, they did about a half hour.
They did about a half an hour. Yeah.
So yeah, it was about a quarter.
Quarter of the length, yeah. Right, okay. Maybe do math. But yeah, a quarter of the length. But I also felt like it was the right length for what they were doing, what they had there. Could there have been longer segments featuring some of the women? Yeah, but once again, they had to close the show into these three hour Raws. It probably wouldn't have gone over as well. So I think it's definitely jarring that it was a quarter long length of the match that they did with the men's back in February. But I also feel like it was the
right. Yeah, I guess that's the only thing to me. Is that a lot of times it's just like if they had given it maybe a little more breathing room between when they did the men's gauntlet and when they did this one, you might forget some of the particulars or you might kind of gloss over it, but it's still pretty fresh in the memory banks, at least for me. So it's kind of tough to... to watch something not quite be a quality. And it was, I guess it's kind of interesting, although not surprising, that Bayley Ruby Riott and Sasha Banks carried the action.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, Mickey James lasted decent length. They were also in her hometown, so while she's also still trying to be a heel with Alexa Bliss. But, you know, her segment with Ruby Riott was a decent length. Obviously, they do not trust a Liv Morgan at all in the ring. Her work is certainly not well regarded. Nor is Dana Brooks. You know, they were both out pretty quickly. Sarah Logan was out, you know, fairly quickly, but I think that was more storyline dictated. She got more than Morgan did. That was more storyline dictated. You know, then Ruby Riott was able to eliminate Bayley after she could beat down 2-on-1 by Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan. Then, you know, Ruby Riott was allowed to go on a decent run. You know, she finished off Dana Brooke pretty quickly. Then had a decent length match with Mickie James, which she also won. And then her and Sasha Banks had, you know, a decent segment of a match. And ending with Sasha Banks winning.
Yeah, I guess it's... It's kind of funny with Sasha. You know, she could really fit as the winner of this thing. But every time that you keep on thinking that she's going to go heel, they don't do it. And honestly, the briefcase is always one of those things. And, you know, Jeremy, at least to me, was the first one to point out how obvious, like, the way that they apply the rules to Money in the Bank, it makes way more sense to have a heel win it than a baby face.
It does, but in that Women's Money in the Bank, there are only two women who are currently on the heel side, Lana and Alexa Bliss. So I think we might be having someone win to set up a turn here. Again, I think that, you know, Natalya and you know, winning it and then cashing in on Ronda Rousey, possibly with that very night. You know, very, very, it's a definitely a likely scenario. Sasha Banks could win it to set up a heel turn over on SmackDown. I don't know if I see any of the SmackDown women going heel. That's the thing. I'm looking at if someone Raw winning.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing is that, honestly, they kind of teased it. They had a nice, segment with, Becky Lynch and Charlotte on SmackDown. You know, cause I do like the way that they can, go from being friendly to sniping at each other. Although the endless, kind of recycling was a little bit weird. You know, of kind of tagline or like, no, I respect you, but it's just like, okay, we got it if you said it a couple of times. We don't need it three or four times.
I know Becky was a heel in NXT, but her character has just developed so much as essentially almost the perfect babyface on the roster. So likable, so comes off so genuinely nice and sweet. She's been backburnered. Granted, at the same time, she's been backburnered for most of the last year. So
right, I think that to me is the biggest reason why she's at least on the possible list. To me, I think Sami Zayn is more proof in the pudding that you can pull that off. Not that she necessarily will, but at least it's something, just because I remember everyone like, oh my god, I can't believe Sami Zayn's not going to be a babyface. And even he was just like, yeah, I've always been a babyface, so this is kind of weird. Like when the wrestler himself admits that it's kind of weird, that's something else. I guess I would be kind of surprised to see it won. Charlotte's even another one that really could turn heel if she wanted
Yeah, but
to.
she can turn heel at any time, especially since she's been a babyface now for well over a year. But she doesn't need the briefcase. She earns her own title shots. She's yeah, anyway like that. But she's it's not like she's not gonna get a title shot anytime soon if she doesn't get the briefcase. So I don't really see it as a gimmick for her. And then Naomi, but I don't see her going heel either at this point.
Oh, right.
She had a run. She still has. She's got. She certainly still has her place on the roster. She's doing well, but I think that she was featured a lot. Last year, but they moved on from that. Maybe they can go back. Now is the time for her. I mean, Lana is the most heelish of the women who've never held the title before, who could sneak in and do it, but I don't foresee it. I think
Yeah,
they know what they.
I think well, A, they still do generally go with someone who's gonna win it and someone who's not gonna waste the shot. I know that Baron Corbin wasted his recently, but for the most part, they've really given it to someone that they, trust is gonna do it, and even Carmella. Even if she ends up being a short time champion, they have enough faith in her in ring to give her the title.
Yeah.
You have there's some level of competency that comes with getting that belt. Because I even think we've mentioned it, Alexa Bliss, her character is so awesome that it's hard to keep the belt off her, even though. I would say that she's better than Carmella in the ring by a fairly substantial margin. But, she still probably isn't one of the top women either.
Well,
Workers.
Alexa Bliss isn't one of the top women in the ring, but she can keep up just fine.
Yeah.
Lana,
But yeah, Lana isn't even close to that neighborhood.
Lana's not in that neighborhood at all. She's not. She's still pretty far out from Carmella in the ring. Lana. Yeah, they got ideas story-wise for her to be in this thing, but. Yeah, beyond this, I don't see it. So yeah, I'm definitely seeing someone from Raw. I think it would either be Sasha, and I'm guessing it could either eventually leading to a Natalya or a Sasha Banks heel turn. I mean, that's where my head's going. I mean, there's once again, but of course, once again, based on the rules. You have a year to cash in, so they could tell a story over the course of a year, leading to a cash in. After WrestleMania, like they did with the Carmella this year. So once again,
No.
you still put it on anybody, but I'm looking at the Raw side of things, and I don't see Alexa Bliss being Alexa Bliss because she's just coming off of a ridiculously long run where between SmackDown and Raw, she was in the
Shoot.
title scene for a year and a half straight.
Yeah, and I even think we've already seen her a little bit of a cooling off period here. So I'm trying to think of who else she just took a loss to recently.
Ember Moon.
Oh yeah, two of them, in fact.
She's taking two clean losses to Ember Moon. Ember Moon is good, but once again, I
Yeah.
don't know. She's in this match to do some athletic stuff and be a good worker. She's not in it to win it, so I'm looking at. I would say my favorite is Natalya, with second being Sasha.
Okay. Well, I That covers a lot of the women's stuff just on both brands, honestly. Outside.
Now, bridging off of that, what made me a little nervous was during that conversation between Charlotte and Becky Lynch, Charlotte saying she knows that Asuka is going to beat Carmella at Money in the Bank. I don't like it when they say things like that. Because Asuka can't fail. They already took her undefeated streak away. They put her on ice for a little bit here.
Well, that was one of the things about SmackDown that was really weird to me. I don't understand why she had as much of a match with Mandy Rose as she did. I mean, I know that they had the assault by Sonya Deville before the match started, but it really wasn't an extended beatdown that, essentially Mandy Rose got to continue later in the match.
Right. Maybe I wasn't paying that close of attention to the match if you just watched it today, but I didn't feel like the match was over really long or that Mandy Rose got in too much offense. I didn't get that vibe from it, but yeah, once again, you have to be careful going forward with Asuka. You can tell the story of her having her first loss, but even if it's she wins by disqualification or count out, having her fail in a title challenge, I wouldn't do it. I think that she should just roll over Carmella fairly easily.
And I guess that's why I kind of expected her to roll over Mandy Rose. Just like, because even on the microphone, Carmella was there, but everyone's just like, oh yeah, she's kind of going to roll over you. And then when she didn't roll over her opponent, I'm like, you guys are telling two different stories here and it is not helping out. because I believe they even got a commercial break, which, I mean, hey, it's great that they at least think enough of Mandy Rose's in-ring work to give her one commercial break with Asuka, which is kind of nice. But, I don't think that does a whole lot for Asuka. But, we'll see, I guess. Because I don't think that, Carmella is a long-term champion. Like, I would be surprised if she had a run even marginally close to that of Alexa Bliss.
No. I don't see that at all. But I don't feel like it needs to last a month longer than Money in the Bank either. I think that, Asuka can't fail again. This is her second shot at a championship against a weak champion. I resist the urge to try to stretch this out. Resist the urge to, say, oh, well, she won by count out. She didn't lose. She didn't win the title. She still failed at her objective. And Asuka should not be failing at her objective other than the rarest of occasions.
Yeah. I was about ready to move on from the ladies, but we may as well address, I would have to say it was one of the bigger talking points of Raw, dare I say. So it is the other side of the equation. Nia Jax having a very interesting promo/match, talking to Ronda Rousey, who was on the headsets up at the Raw announce booth. What did you think about this angle?
I thought it was a very strong angle. I thought it was done very well. once again, there are things that, you know, story-wise that could be tightened up. There are certainly things the announcers could add to the equation to not make people think that this is Nia Jax making a complete heel turn at this point, because I don't believe that that's what it was. The words of Stephanie McMahon are in her head. They should have been saying that you know, Nia is letting Stephanie McMahon's words get to her, and you know, she's taking it out on this woman, and she's trying to send a message to Ronda Rousey. I thought Nia Jax was very, very good throughout this. It was interesting how, even with the headset on, they did not want Ronda Rousey saying much.
Yeah, to me, the only problem was maybe it wasn't full heel turn for Nia Jax, but it still seemed, they did not push the Stephanie McMahon is in her mind portion in the announce booth.
No, they didn't do that at all. No.
So
I'm just thinking of my own storyline.
to me, I guess that's why it was a little bit of a problem. Like, in some ways, the aberration in Nia Jax character really is when she broke off from Alexa Bliss, which was awkward in and of itself. You know, it's almost like the WWE wanted to, they're like, oh, we love Nia Jax as a heel, but she's with another heel. How do we break them up? Oh, we'll make her a baby face. And they're like, oh, and it's pretty much what we've been talking about. A monster baby face really doesn't work. And they're like, oh, yeah, it is much better if she's that way. And it's going to carry this angle a lot better with Ronda Rousey if we do it this way, too.
They brought it up last week. Stephanie brought it up. How long it took Nia Jax to beat Alexa Bliss twice. that's out there. It's part of the story going into this. That, you know, I guess Nia has to stop being lazy and regain her mean streak. And you know, so, I mean, is what they need to do.
The announcers need to push that. Like, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the story. Like, it really, Nia works better as a heel, and I mean, we've been talking about it for a while now. So I'm good with the angle, but it does just seem really awkward to have her turn babyface essentially for 2 months to win the title just to throw her back into something of a heel spot, or at least a tweener spot.
Right, yeah. But once again, that's a byproduct of going to this match so quick. You know, they need to reestablish Nia Jax as a monster, you know, to be a threat to Ronda Rousey. And, you know, that the segment did a good job of that. Whatever they do next week with Nia and Natalya should continue that down that way. I certainly see Nia getting a little rough with Natalya and you know, really trying to send a message to Ronda through her best friend. Which could also,
lead to a reason why Natalya
heel turn. So all this can make sense, but WWE creative in this day and age despite all the money they're making for TV, their TV writers do fail to connect all the dots frequently within storylines.
Have a tendency to be. They're looking at the tree and not the forest sometimes. Or
they're looking at the forest and not the tree. I actually think the big picture is actually I would probably flip around what you just said. I think they know in a lot of ways the ultimate destination of where they're going is filling out the week to week detail work. That's the problem.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. So, I guess we did move to the Raw side of things. And I feel like we've covered the women pretty well on both brands. So that kind of does leave... you alluded to it, I guess, earlier, is one way to go. Braun Strowman, Finn Balor. That is a match that made me go, oh, they probably could sell a Brock Lesnar versus Finn Balor match.
Finn is such a good babyface apparel. He takes great bumps. He sells great. And his comeback, his offense is so crisp. You know, I mean, it's a lot of running drop kicks and that's the sling blade and stuff off the ropes and over the top and dives, stuff that looks good. He's not trying to body slam. That's what helps make it work.
A man three times his size.
No, his offense does not revolve around. He's not a small guy who does a power bomb or something involving like a press slam into whatever. You know, even someone over his shoulder as a finish, and then has problems later on. You know, transitioning. You know, into wrestling. You know, the heavyweights, the super heavyweights. His offense, it's crisp, it's believable. It's again, and coming off of his bumping and his selling, he's a great professional wrestler. And
yeah,
his matches against Braun are just ridiculously well formatted, well thought out,
well executed.
And they're just really good matches, and they know what they're doing. They know how to tell the story. They know how Finn should get over on Braun, you know, without it looking ridiculous. It's the inverse of this whole Daniel Bryan big cast thing, because obviously because Braun is so much better than big cast, but also because Finn Balor's offense is once again it is things that he can do against a bigger guy. Whereas, I think a lot of Daniel Bryan's offense, of his holds and his counters, and it's like, why wouldn't this bigger man just swat him off like a fly?
And even when he was doing the when he's trying to put on the yes lock, the big cast, it's just like, as much as I like Daniel Bryan, this is kind of stretching things here, guys.
Because
of the size differential, it's huge.
It is, and because Finn Balor's offense is so much, you know, fast striking, it can work. It can work to stun and immobilize the big man. And double foot stomp off the top rope looks great. I've never understood how that doesn't actually. I don't even understand the move. At 35, almost 35 years old, I don't understand the allusion to it. It looks like he's crushing the guy's sternum. I don't understand how it's not.
You can tell that he definitely leans back.
I got everyone for me.
And I'm not quite sure still, you're still digging your heels in. Like, I'm still sitting there going, man, that still looks brutal. Like, and I see the guys, you know, cover their sternums and their stomach area to tense up for it. But I'm like, man, that's just rough. Even if the guy's a buck 85 soaking wet, that's a lot of weight coming down on anyone any size.
That's part of why it works. That's part of why you can believe that he could beat Braun Strowman with it. But because he's facing Braun Strowman, I gotta hit that move again. And then we're left with after Kevin Owens interferes, we're left with that question: could he have won the match? and it's a brilliant way to do it. And you could easily get another match out of Braun Strowman and Finn Balor down the line, especially if you play the demon card. To finish the job. Finn Balor's stock has risen the last 2 weeks from working with Braun Strowman. I don't think it's Braun Strowman's stock that's risen, because I don't think Braun Strowman's stock can rise any higher until he wins the Universal title. It's Finn Balor who actually, I think, benefited the most from working with Braun. I mean, I guess you could say as a worker, in the non-kayfabe standpoint of things, Braun may have learned some things from the veteran Finn Balor, but from a completely kayfabe storyline standpoint, within the eyes of the fans, I think it's Finn Balor who gained the most from standing toe to toe with Braun Strowman and almost winning twice.
Yeah, I honestly hadn't thought about it that way. I mean, Balor's kind of been, he's another guy that's been kind of lost. He came back from injury, and it's been a bit of time now that he's been back, and he's kind of been stuck. And even when he's been featured in, like a Paul Heyman promo or something of the sort, like, just when you think things are kind of moving the right directions, something crazy like Seth Rollins going into completely bonkers awesome wrestler mode happens, and he can't even get the Intercontinental title.
right. But I think Finn's having a good year. I think Finn's. I mean, I think the stuff with Seth Rollins and both coming in and out of WrestleMania, I think that helped him a lot. And even though he lost more than he won, and then this Braun Strowman deal, I think that he's making up believers out of the non hardcore audience that followed him through NXT, or even is familiar with his New Japan stuff. I think these last top 2 months since WrestleMania and in the period before when he was wrestling Seth Rollins, had a couple of matches with Seth Rollins before WrestleMania, and the WrestleMania match with the Triple Threat with The Miz. And once again, because Seth Rollins has been on such a roll, Finn Balor is kind of a step behind in that in some ways.
Right.
But Finn's put together a great body of work as well this year, and I think it's. People are starting to really take notice.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those things, too, that there are so many times where I'm like, oh, man, why didn't the WWE strike while the iron was hot? And unfortunately for Balor, I mean, he got the big come-in, but, it's been more of a recovery process since then. Just because he did get immediately hurt after winning the Universal title. For the first time ever holder. So, I mean, the injury timing for him was pretty awful, too. Because we talked about that, a little bit with Cass. And so, it was one of those things that they really capitalized on his NXT momentum when he first came in, but he really needed to recapture it, unfortunately for him. But it's taken him a while, but I'm not surprised he's gotten there either, just because I watched him once or twice in NXT. I'm just like, oh my God, okay, I got it. I heard people really loving him, and it did not take me very long to fall in love myself.
Right. No, and then again, when he's featured, when he can show off his work, I think there was some initial confusion about the whole, regular Finn Balor versus Demon Finn Balor, and it was poorly explained in the early days of his run, and then he came back and was almost immediately put into this fiasco of a feud with Bray Wyatt. That hurt him. That he was using.
Yeah, Kane, well,
Kane's bitch for no good reason, and had a potential feud with Brock Lesnar taken from him. But he's slowly climbed his way back.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that, yeah, it's been a climb for him, and, good for him that he's gotten back there. We'll see what happens as far as things go down, but, you know, I'm trying to figure out where I was going with that, but yeah. Balor has big things for him. I don't think he's one of those guys, though. Again, since I guess I don't see them turning him heel and having him win the briefcase on the Raw side of things. But who else? Who else is in that match? Because like Braun Strowman is another guy, much like Charlotte. That you don't, he doesn't need the briefcase to get a title match.
He is in that match to be, you know, something of a focal point. You know, he's gonna throw people around, but they're gonna figure out we gotta all team up on this guy and get him out of here. And he's gonna get beat up. He's gonna come back. He's gonna there's ways, of course, to make this the match out so it's. Potentially an incredible match coming up, but as far as who's gonna win it, yeah, no, it's just, Braun Strowman can get his title shots the easy way, or not? Well, I guess when it makes supposed to be, he can earn his shots later. He'll have his match with Brock Lesnar. Well, depending on how many more matches Brock Lesnar is around for, who they decide eventually is going to get it, but he's definitely in the running. And then from there, at least when it comes to this match, there's more people in the match who are heels. Although, I guess Kevin Owens is the only real heel on the Raw side. Strowman's essentially turned babyface, although he still wrestles the other babyfaces all the time. It seems he's the only guy maybe pulling off cool tweeters, or at least. And then Owens is always a possibility. He can win the thing. Bobby Roode, if they eventually want to turn him heel, he can win it. Miz and Rusev would be Miz, Rusev, Samoa Joe. Yeah, SmackDown side is heavy on the heels.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I didn't really pay attention to the composition of the match. The Miz is another one where, as great as he's been in him lording over with the briefcase, would be pretty priceless. I don't see that as a necessity just because he is a bona fide super, main eventer now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. I mean, Miz having the meeting the bank, winning the title, could be a great story if he eventually drops the title to Daniel Bryan. If that's not the story they want to go with, then I guess, no, then not Miz.
Well, that's another one that, I guess it's kind of interesting that they're not going with that right away. I'm just going to say that Daniel Bryan has not been the most pushed guy on the roster. I mean, he's another guy, I guess, that doesn't need the Money in the Bank briefcase. But it's kind of interesting that he's not included, and he's kind of taken a lot of L's. Outside of the whole big cast match,
he's failed to qualify twice now. But Daniel Bryan's career has always had peaks and valleys, and he's got to struggle to climb the mountain. so I can see him, you know, getting it back eventually. But as again, so Miz winning to me is the bridge to to him losing it to Daniel Bryan. I think that when they go with that feud, no matter what the title feud is on SmackDown, by the sheer force of the two personalities and the promos and everything they do, I think the Miz Daniel Bryan storyline will supersede whatever's going on with the title. You'll say, for example, heading into SummerSlam. So, in that regard, I guess, why not have the title involved in it then, and just to make it that much bigger?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely employ the go big or go home routine for that one. Daniel Bryan recapturing it on The Miz, who was talking trash about him. You can't really get bigger in the story department than that. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah. but that's just one idea. Once again, Samoa Joe could definitely win it. Rusev could definitely win it. I'm looking at a current. I'll make a prediction right now. Screw it. I'll go with Rusev.
Yeah, I mean, like you said last week, it'll be kind of interesting if they have one of the two. Well, they're not going to have Lana win. So if they have Rusev win earlier in the match, or earlier in the card, they can really go with Lana possibly pulling it off. Because who knows, if they don't, I guess the Mr. and Mrs. Rusev thing, or Mr. and Mrs. Money in the Bank, doesn't quite work as well. But I'd be a little surprised also if they don't close with the men's match.
I'm thinking they're going to close with Rousey and Nia Jax.
Oh, okay. From the way the WWE presents Ronda Rousey, that would not surprise me, and it's probably a good way to go too. Even, I mean, they have definitely proven that on. Well, I can't even say they're off-brand pay-per-views, because Goldberg versus Lesnar, not a particularly long match as a main event, but it was fitting for what it was. And I don't think that Jax versus Ronda Rousey needs to be that long.
No, it really doesn't need to be that long. It can still go on last, or that's one thing left of any note that we haven't talked about yet. Styles and Nakamura could go on last. I mean, it's their big chance to finally have that match, to finally have that classic match. Their matches, I think, have gotten better and crisper, and the face heel dynamic is right. Putting aside the two crappy finishes in 9 days, the stuff they've done week to week on television has been very strong. Nakamura is tremendous. I love that he's now taken the last man standing 10 count to as part of his gimmick, and of course beating Ty Dillinger the perfect 10.
I've got to admit, I was so hoping that he was going to do "I'm learning English," and he was, doing the count to help himself learn English, since I know speak English.
I was hoping he would count in Japanese.
Ichi, ni, san, chi. I used to know up to 10. I don't really remember that anymore.
I can get up to 7 because that's Go Roku.
Yeah, I was much better when I was in Kenpo than I am now. But anyway, that would have been kind of funny too if he had just started counting in Japanese. Just to throw people off. I mean, that match really, there's a lot of potential in it, obviously. I mean, we really haven't seen a great match. They seem to have gotten away a little bit from Shinsuke being a ball shot artist, because it is certainly something that they concentrated on this week, was his striking ability. And it's something that really wasn't highlighted that much. It's been highlighted more since he was a heel, but they are really going for it now, which is good, because he is, there's a reason he's the king of strong style.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's very, it's a good match stipulation for him. His big move is the Kinshasa running knee strike. Obviously the match is going to be more of a brawl. They're going to use weapons. They're going to fight in the crowd. It's going to be a match where they're going to break the announce tables. So they'll have the toys, that they'll have the freedom to do whatever they want with the match. It won't be a classic wrestling match like they had at the Tokyo Dome back, over 2 years ago, but in a WWE style gimmick match, I think that they will certainly flourish. I think that if this is the last match they'll have, one of the matches they'll have against each other, I think it will close the feud off well. And after that final chapter, I do believe that, you know, this feud is going to be remembered. It's going to be remembered fine.
I mean, again, it was just the dynamic when they started was weird, just because it was face on face. Ever since they turned Shinsuke heel, everything has worked a lot better. So yeah, good on the WWE for recognizing the problem and getting that rectified. It's definitely gotten over Nakamura's personality more. So there's not really anything bad that you can say about it. Like, they definitely made the right call on that one. And I believe you said that was the last big thing we had to talk about. I really don't have a docket to strike off a list here. But I feel like that was pretty good. Okay, you have satisfaction, I have satisfaction, hopefully the listeners do, at DeFrango11, at Chris Calamita, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us where you can, 5 stars, if you can, 5, like Booker T, 5, so, 5, and one more 5 to make it 5, 5s, and sure enough, have a good night, grandkids.
Later.